Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. When the state of Michigan switched Flint's water supply in 2014, Matt McFarland, operations supervisor at Flint's water treatment plant, warned others that the water was not safe to drink and that people would die. People did die, but exactly how many people died from one of the biggest outbreaks of Legionnaires' disease in the country's history? That answer is not so simple, and Frontline producers spent more than 2 years in Flint investigating that story. Frontline's Flint's Deadly Water premieres tonight at 9 p.m. Central on SDPB-TV and online at pbs.org/frontline. Joining us now is the film's director, Abby Ellis. Abby, thanks very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
All right, more than 2 years in Flint and you know, on the ground in Flint. Tell us when you went with your team and why did you stay? What were you looking for?
So we started going to Flint. You know, half the team actually was born in Flint, and one of our colleagues was born and raised there, and he also lived there. And then my colleague, Kayla Rubel, and I traveled to Flint back and forth to New York since 2016. And we ended up staying for the most part of 2018 when we were doing this pneumonia investigation. And the reason that we wanted to look into pneumonia and the Legionnaires outbreak is because, as you said, it was one of the biggest outbreaks the country's ever seen, but there was not a formal investigation done at any point. There wasn't an investigation by the health department, whether at the county or the state level. And there also wasn't an investigation done by the CDC. And because of that, it was possible, we heard from experts, that the outbreak could have been much larger and these cases of Legionnaires' disease may have gone undiagnosed and consequently people may have died of pneumonia. Mm.
All right. So for people who know primarily about the Flint water crisis through lead poisoning in children, this is an adjacent story, but it's slightly different. Walk us through very quickly. You know, Flint is getting their water from Detroit. There's going to be a pipeline built. They don't have a choice. The city council doesn't have a choice. Their water supply is switched to come from the Flint River. And that is when the problem starts because it goes through this water treatment plant that's not really prepared. Tell us about that moment when city officials are testing the water and saying it's time to, you know, open your taps and drink water from the Flint River.
Right. So what a lot of people don't know is, as you said, when Matt McFarland gives this, you know, warning to his sister, he's foretold the crisis in that one conversation, because almost immediately after they switched the water over to the Flint River, people started dying, and people started dying of pneumonia, and they also started dying of Legionnaires' disease. And that's just a couple of weeks after the fact. And so because everyone kind of who's heard about the lead crisis might know that they didn't treat the water with corrosion control. And so the water was leaching lead from the pipes and the lead was getting into the water before it was going to people's homes. And similarly, because they didn't use corrosion control, the pipes became a perfect breeding ground for bacteria and different pathogens. And one of those pathogens was Legionella. And so, you know, a lot of people don't realize you don't necessarily get Legionella from drinking the water. You get it from inhaling, you know, mist or steam, whether it's a steamy shower or a sprinkler, something like that.
And normally what would happen is you test the water, you treat the water. I mean, it's a bacteria. How, I don't want to use the word simple, but how much do we already know about stopping an outbreak like that once, you know, once officials have a sense that there's a problem?
Right. So, you know, we spoke to experts all over the country who dealt with these outbreaks in different cities. And they've told us that after the very first case of Legionnaires' disease, it's enough to launch an investigation because you want to get ahead of the outbreak. You want to identify the source of the outbreak and disinfect the source so that, you know, the outbreak doesn't persist. Where in Flint, we see by the end of the first summer, by the end of 2014, there are already 30 cases. And, you know, the governor doesn't make a formal announcement until January of 2016. And so the cases continue to climb, and no investigation is launched. In the film, we talk about how the CDC really urged the health departments to let them come in and conduct a thorough investigation, and that never happened. So, you know, to experts that we've spoken to, it seems relatively straightforward. You know, it's like contact tracing. You want to figure out what the source is and then disinfect the source and, you know, treat the patients who are sick and hope that there aren't any more patients.
I want to go back to Matt McFarland because he's the supervisor of the treatment plant. There's a plant foreman. He tells his supervisor they're warned that the plant is not ready. Why don't they listen?
Right. And so Matt was the foreman at the water treatment plant.
Right.
And he told not only his supervisor, he told multiple supervisors, including a state official, saying, you know, he said that he begged them not to turn it on and begged them to delay the switch, that they weren't ready. He knew the systems weren't working. They didn't have enough staff, and he was terrified of what would happen. Unclear as to the motive behind why they didn't listen to him. But what we know is that ultimately the decision makers were state officials. And so despite the fact that they were, you know, hearing the alarm bell rung by all of these plant employees, it was ultimately, you know, state officials who made the decision to turn the plant on anyway.
And there's one really uncomfortable moment. There's, you know, many sort of shocking moments in this front line. But when he tells his sister, and she's texting people saying, don't drink the water, don't drink the water. Tell everybody that you love not to drink the water. The natural question there is, why didn't they go to the press? Why didn't they tell reporters, don't drink the water, no one's listening to us?
Right. You know, we've asked ourselves that quite a bit, and not just with Matt. There were a number of people that knew that the plant wasn't ready. And I think what we've uncovered is that there was a pretty serious environment of fear that persisted. I mean, a lot of these guys, you know, they're working at the Flint water treatment plant. They're not making a ton of money, but they're making enough money. And, you know, they're being instructed by the people above them to look the other way. And I think that people were scared of losing their jobs. They were scared of getting in trouble, and they were scared of retaliation. There's also not a very good avenue for whistleblowers. And I know this was something that state reps were trying to pass in the legislature, a new bill to protect whistleblowers, in, for example, in cases like this, because there were so many of them, but their, you know, cry for help didn't really penetrate the headlines at all.
I want to jump to these pneumonia deaths and frontline reporters analyzing, you know, going through every single death certificate, trying to do the work that you would really think state officials would have done. What did you find when you went through those death certificates looking for cases of pneumonia?
Yeah, so we found 115 pneumonia deaths that happened during the time frame of the outbreak of Legionnaires' disease. And, you know, we took that information and commissioned this team of epidemiologists who are affiliated with Emory University, and they analyzed the data more broadly and compared it to control groups to determine if any of it was statistically meaningful. And what they found was that of those 115 pneumonia deaths, they can say that there were 70 pneumonia deaths that happened during the outbreak of Legionnaires that otherwise wouldn't have happened. It was an unusually high number. And that there were certain pockets of the city where the water, where the infrastructure is a bit older. And in those pockets of the city, we found these clusters. So we found in a 1 mile long neighborhood, we found 3 cases of Legionnaires and 6 pneumonia deaths. And those 9 people got sick within a couple weeks of each other, and most of them died. So that is consistent with the notion that, you know, some of these cases of pneumonia that we found may have been undiagnosed cases of Legionnaires.
tell me about Jackie McBride, because not everyone, you know, not everything is a death certificate. Jackie McBride is talking to us in this front line. Tell me how she contracted Legionnaires.
So yeah, Jackie is the mom. Jasmine is the daughter. Who Jasmine got sick when she was 26. She got sick with Legionnaires in August, just a couple of months after the switch. And at the time, Jasmine was working at a senior living center. She was getting ready to go to nursing school. She wanted to be a pediatric nurse. And, you know, she had diabetes, but she was otherwise, you know, pretty healthy. And Jasmine got sick in August, spent about 3 to 4 months in the hospital. When she got out, her health had taken such a steep decline that she had to relearn how to do it. She had to relearn how to walk, talk, eat. She suffered severe anxiety as a result of her long hospital stay. And in the years after that, I mean, she had to drop out of her nursing program. She was confined to, you know, a couch at her mom's house where she was on 24-hour-a-day oxygen. She had to go to dialysis a couple times a week. And ultimately, in February of this year, she was passing away. And, you know, while we... her medical records, you can separate the two.
We're talking with Abby Ellis right now about Frontline's Flint Deadly Water. It premieres tonight at 9 p.m. Central on SDPB and SDPB TV, online at pbs.org/frontline. And Abby, what can you tell us about, as you go through this? This is a long story that people will really have to tune in to Frontline to see how it unspools. But as reporters who put the amount of effort into this kind of investigation and see some of the lack of justice that people are struggling with, how did it make you feel to be part of this investigation that can be in many ways so unsatisfying?
Yeah, it's exhausting. You know, the people of Flint have been fighting for a long time. And we always said that if we find one more death, that's significant. And it's also terrible. And we found a lot more than one. So, you know, we hope that the information is helpful in preventing and working in these outbreaks in the future. But ultimately, I think everyone around the Flint water crisis, whether they're reporters or residents, are pretty exhausted by the whole thing.
Right. And so when we hear the head of Michigan's health department, Nick Lyon, you hear scientists say that he was in a room with them saying, well, people have to die of something, in sort of this flippant way, a comment which Nick Lyon has denied. And then you compare that with, you know, sitting with Jasmine McBride and being at her funeral. It's a pretty stark moment for everyone in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And, you know, there was a big disconnect. I was in the courtroom a lot, and I was also with Jasmine at her house a lot. And I just used to think to myself, I wish that these officials could come to the house of Jasmine and meet her and see that these are real people and, you know, their suffering is real and it could be a loved one of theirs. Because I think in a lot of this, the human story is often missed, and it's so, so important.
So much of that human story, as well as the data on display for Frontline's Flint's Deadly Water, you can see that tonight, 9 p.m. Central, and on pbs.org/frontline. Abby Ellis, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.